pseudonyms. It was quite fashionable in earlier times to refrain from putting one's name to things one had written. The writer could leave himself unnamed, anonymous, from Greek words meaning no name, or else he could use a false name, pseudonym, from Greek words meaning false name. So common was the practice that a pseudonym is often referred to as a pen name, or to give it greater elegance by placing it in French, a nom de plume. There were a variety of reasons for this. In most places in the world, and at most times, it was all too easy to write something that would get you into trouble. The corruption, venality, and cruelty of those in power cried out for exposure, and those in power had the strongest objections to being exposed. For that reason, writers had to expect all sorts of governmental correction if caught, anywhere from a fine to death by torture. The best-known example of this type of pseudonym was Voltaire, the 18th-century French satirist whose real name was François-Marie Arouet. A second major reason was that any non-scholarly writing was looked upon as rather frivolous, and a decent person guilty of concocting such material might well be looked upon askance by society and considered as having lost caste. A pseudonym, therefore, preserved respectability. This was especially true of women who were widely considered subhuman in mentality by men, and who would have shocked the world by a too open demonstration of the possession of brains. Mary Ann Evans, therefore, wrote under the name of George Eliot, and Charlotte Bronte, at first, wrote under the name of Currer Bell. One would think that neither reason would hold for the world of modern American science fiction. Why should anyone fear punishment for writing science fiction in our free land? Or why should anyone fear the loss of respectability if convicted of the deed? And yet, it is conceivable, particularly in the early days of magazine science fiction, that people in the more sensitive professions, such as teaching, would not have cared to have it known that they wrote pseudoscientific trash, and so would protect themselves from lack of promotion or outright dismissal by the use of a pseudonym. I don't know of such cases definitely, but I suspect some. It is even more likely that in the bad old days before the women's movement became strong, women who wrote science fiction concealed their sex from the readers, and even sometimes from the editors. Science fiction was thought to be a very masculine pursuit at the time, and I know two editors, no names please, even though both are now dead, who insisted on believing that women could not write good science fiction. Pseudonyms were therefore necessary if they were to sell anything at all. Sometimes women did not have to use pseudonyms. Their first names might be Epicene, and that would be protection enough. Thus, Leslie F. Stone and Lee Brackett were women, but as far as one could tell from their names, they might be as masculine as Leslie Fielder and Lee Hunt. Editors and readers at first believed they were. Or women might simply convert names to initials. Could you tell that A.R. Long owned up to the name of Amelia? Or that C.L. Moore was Catherine to her friends? There were other reasons for pseudonyms in science fiction. In the early days of the magazine, many of the successful writers could only make a living by writing a great deal, just as fast as they could, for a variety of pulp markets. They might use different names for different markets, creating separate personalities, so to speak, that wouldn't compete with each other. Thus, Will Jenkins wrote for the Slicks under his own name, but adopted the pseudonym Murray Leinster when he wrote science fiction. Sometimes, even within the single field of science fiction, particular writers wrote too many stories. They were so good that editors would cheerfully buy, let us say, 18 stories from them in a particular year, in which they only published 12 issues of their magazines. This meant, if you work out the arithmetic carefully, that it would be necessary to run more than one story by them in a single issue now and then, and editors generally have a prejudice against that. Readers would feel they were cheated of variety, or suspect that editors were showing undue favouritism, or who knows what. Therefore, some of the stories would be put out under a pseudonym. The pseudonyms might be transparent enough, For instance, Robert A. Heinlein, at the height of his magazine popularity, wrote half his stories under the name of Anson MacDonald. But Bob's middle initial stood for Anson, and MacDonald was the maiden name of his then wife. Similarly, L. Ron Hubbard wrote under the name of René Lafayette, but the initial L in Hubbard's name was Lafayette. And René was a not-too-distant version of Ron. Still, as long as the readers were led to believe that not too many stories of one author were included in the inventory, all was well. Sometimes an author is so identified with a particular type of story that when he writes another type of story, he doesn't want to confuse the reader by false associations, so he adopts a new name. Thus, John W. Campbell was a writer of super science stories of cosmic scope, and one day he wrote a story called Twilight, which was altogether different. He put it under the name of Don A. Stewart. His then wife's maiden name was Donna Stewart, you see, and rapidly made that name even more popular than his own. Sometimes, an author simply wants to separate his writing activities from his non-writing activities, if they are of equal importance to him. Thus, a talented teacher at Milton Academy, who is named Harry C. Stubbs, writes under the name of Hal Clement. He's not hiding. Hal is short for Harry, as all Shakespearean devotees know, and the C in his full name stands for Clement. Again, my dear wife has practiced medicine for over 30 years as Janet Jepson, M.D. As a writer, she prefers J.O. Jepson. The earnings fall into two different slots as far as the IRS is concerned, and that makes it convenient for her bookkeeping. In my own case, I have eschewed pseudonyms almost entirely. I am far too fond of my own name and far too proud of my writing to want to sail under false colours for any reason, and yet in one or two cases. Thus, in 1951, I was persuaded to write a juvenile science fiction novel in the hope that it would be sold as the beginning of a long-lived television series. Those were early days, and no one understood how television was going to work. I objected, very correctly, I think, that TV might ruin the stuff and make me ashamed of having my name associated with it. My editor said, "Then use a pseudonym." I did, plucking Paul French out of the air for the purpose, and eventually wrote 6 novels under that name. Some people with little knowledge of science fiction assumed from this that all my science fiction was written under Paul French, a suggestion that simply horrified me. As soon as it was clear that TV was not interested in my juveniles, I dropped all pretense and made use of the 3 laws of robotics, for instance, which was a dead giveaway. Eventually, when it was time for new printings, I had my own name put upon it. Again, in 1942, I wrote a short story for an editor who wanted it done under a pseudonym in order to give the impression that it was by a brand new author. The reason is complicated, and I won't bore you with it. You'll find it in my autobiography. I wrote it reluctantly under the name George E. Dale, but eventually included it in my book, The Early Asimov, as a story of my own. Also, in 1942, I sold a story to the magazine Super Science Stories, which printed it under the pseudonym H.B. Ogden, for reasons I no longer remember. Even my memory has its limits. So little did I care for the story, and so unhappy was I over the non-use of my name, that I totally forgot about it until nearly 40 years later, when I was going over my diary carefully in order to prepare my autobiography. I was shocked to find there was a story of mine that I had forgotten and didn't own in printed form. Fortunately, with the help of Forrest J. Ackerman, I got the issue and reprinted the story in the first volume of my autobiography, In Memory Yet Green, acknowledging it as my own. In 1971, I was persuaded to write a book entitled The Sensuous Dirty Old Man, in which I gently satirized sexual how-to books, such as The Sensuous Woman. Since the latter book was written by a writer identified only as J, my editor felt the joke should be carried on by having my book written by Dr. A. Even before publication day, however, it was announced that I was the author, and my identity was never a secret. At the present moment, then, absolutely none of my writing appears under anything but my own name. Which brings up one puzzle. The early pulps occasionally made use of house names. A particular magazine would use a pseudonym that was never used except in that magazine, but that pseudonym might be used by any number of different writers. I have never really understood why this was done. And if any reader knows, I would appreciate being told.